Yeah. Hey, Steve Miller, better known as Kelly's Dad, Marketing Gunslinger, gang. Of course, you probably already know that. I probably already introduced it with my, because you can tell that this is Memorex. This is a recorded program right now. I'm going to be talking with my newest best friend, John Jantz, and isn't that what movie reviewers say when they interview the stars, you know, stuff like that, right? But John has been he doesn't know this, but he's been kind of a hero of mine, you know, from a distance, a mentor of mine from a distance, because, I mean, I've been in this for a long time, and I'm an inveterate reader. I read like crazy, and a book that came out, and I don't even remember, when did Duct Tape Marketing first come out?
So Duct Tape Marketing was the title of my first book, and it came out in 2007.
Yeah. We're talking 12 years ago. That's great. I mean, my first book came out in 1990. Oh. I know you've read it several times. How to Get the Most Out of Trade Shows. Never mind, but you didn't. So, but anyway, I thought when Duct Tape Marketing came out, I thought that was a fantastic book. A fantastic book. And, you know, and you went on to have several other books. And in fact, I'm going to tell you that as much as I loved Duct Tape Marketing, this was my favorite book.
Yeah.
Right there. Referral Engine. So, and everybody that's watching this right now, you want to get this Duct Tape Marketing. You want to get all this stuff. We're going to talk about his newest book too, but you want to get this because it's orange. As you can see, it's like orange, but it's that one is, boy, that one has got lots of, notes and stuff like that. Love that stuff. I love that stuff. Just give me a quick, really give me a 30-second Jeopardy. What got you into doing, you know, when Duct Tape Marketing was your first book, what was the background and the impetus behind all
that? Sure. Well, I'd had my own marketing firm for over a decade by that point. But it was really just, what do you need? Sure, I can do that, you know, kind of project work, but I love working with small business owners, but they were really hard. They needed everything, didn't have the budget, didn't have the attention span. And so Duct Tape Marketing
was talking to you, gang.
Duct Tape Marketing was really my attempt to say, okay, how can I put together something where I can say, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what you're going to do. Here are the results we hope to get. Here's what it costs. And so I did that really to kind of solve my frustration. And frankly, I immediately knew I was onto something because it's still today one of the greatest challenges of small business to buy marketing services. Everybody, and increasingly everybody, is selling a piece of the puzzle. And so what I brought to the world, I think, of small business at least, was that I'm going to start with strategy before we do tactics, and we're going to then install a marketing system. And that really was the genesis of Duct Tape Marketing. I gave it a name because I felt like it had to be sort of branded. And that was the name I came up with.
Well, you know, and it was a great name because you tied it into saying you need a tool like duct tape or something like that to wrap it all together. But obviously the idea of small businesses they typically are not thinking strategy. And they start out with the tactics, and anyway, I don't want to get into all of that. I what I want to do is I want to ask you because you have a new book out.
I do,
and I want to get to that, but I want to get to that through your first books.
Okay.
And so if we talk about, you know, the Duct Tape Marketing, the Referral Engine, and then Duct Tape Selling, for me, those are the three. Mm-hmm. Primary books. I'm going to be stupid here. Did you write some other books? Because those are the only three that I have.
Yeah, I've actually written a couple other books. One very specific on search engine optimization called SEO for Growth.
Okay.
And then another one called The Commitment Engine, which was really a little more about what it takes from a mindset standpoint to grow a business.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Which kind of gets you closer to this.
It does.
Right.
Yep.
So let me ask you about Duct Tape Marketing. What do you think now that it's 12 years since then? What have you heard from people, or what do you feel was the biggest takeaway people had from Duct Tape Marketing?
Well, it's almost sad in a way, but you know, the still today. I mean, because I haven't, you know, I still preach and teach, and I've revised Duct Tape Marketing once. I'm working on the second revision that'll come out next year. So it's continued to evolve. But this approach of strategy before tactics, I've said that phrase probably 6 million times, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to say it another 60 million because it hasn't really sunk in. In fact, Google the term marketing strategy, and you'll find a bunch of blog posts that list 15 tactics to grow your business. And it still hasn't sunk home exactly what a marketing strategy is, I think, for a lot of people and why it's so important. And what I tell people all the time is in a lot of ways, if you get the strategy right, which is going to involve, you know, your ideal customer and the value that you bring to them and your big differentiator, and how you go to market and how you serve clients. I mean, that's the sense of strategy. Some of the tactics almost don't matter anymore because, you know, or at least the idea that you got to jump on the next new one that comes along. If you have your strategy right, you will grow your business.
Yeah, I 100% on board with you on that. And I still hear, you know, 30 plus years later since I started all this is every day I'm listening to people and I just go, look, guys, you know, let's figure out your strategy first. And then we'll worry about whether you use social media or not. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's like that. Okay. So then, referral engine.
Yes.
All right. Which I, like I say, I love because, and again, small businesses really rely heavily on referrals. They all do. And none of them have a plan for that.
Yeah.
They just let it happen.
Yeah. And that was really why I wrote the referral engine, because in working with at that point, you know, over a decade of working with small business owners, I mean, that's what I discovered is that, you know, 75, 80% of their business, at least the best business, came by way of referral, but nobody did anything about it. You know, it was kind of like, do good work and referrals will come. I don't want to go ask for them and beg for them. And so I wrote that book really as kind of a roadmap for first how to be more referable, because let's face it, you know, I can't tell you all the secret ninja tricks to get more referrals if you know, you're not doing a good job.
That was always rule number one when I would say to people, I would say rule number one is you must be referable.
Yeah. But then, you know, I had worked with a lot of businesses, seen good things. I had implemented a lot of good things in terms of actual intentional practices to generate or amplify your referability. And so that was really why I wrote the referral engine. And I wouldn't say it's a follow-up to Duct Tape Marketing, but it certainly shares a lot of the same idea about the customer journey and about you know, developing a marketing strategy for sure.
Yeah, I agree. So then Duct Tape Selling, which... Right. Has to be a follow-up to marketing.
Yeah, it is very much a follow-up to Duct Tape Marketing, but it was also meant to be is an acknowledgement that the world of selling or the traditional salesperson had changed dramatically, and it's actually, in my opinion, shifted a little more towards being a marketer, building authority, building expertise, being seen as a value player in the chain as opposed to an information deliverer, because, you know, the information's all online.
Information,
already.
You don't own the information.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I think that I was encouraging with independent salespeople, people who are in a sales role for their company, even founders who thought selling was just going out and, you know, calling on people, that they actually had to do some things that were really traditionally more in the marketer's basket.
Yeah, well, even understanding their marketplace.
Yeah, yeah.
Better than anybody else. And I'm a fan of Peter Drucker.
I am too.
You know, Drucker, my favorites, you know, quotes from him are number one. He said, you know, the purpose of business is to create a customer.
That's right.
Boom. Everything else follows behind that. And then he said, and because the purpose of business is to create a customer, there are only two functions of a business. One is marketing, and one is innovation. And then he said, and the purpose of marketing is to make selling superfluous.
Right.
So it's interesting that you say that even today, the good salespeople actually are in essence good marketers too.
That's right.
They might have a face to face ultimately that most marketers don't have. But I really agree a lot with what Drucker said when he said, you know, if you really are good at marketing, it makes your sales, if not necessarily superfluous, but makes it so much easier.
Yeah,
so
that's
much
right.
Easier.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So now, throughout all of this, and then the other book that you talked about, the commitment.
The commitment engine. Yeah,
engine. Right.
Came right after the referral engine.
You know, so you had something must have been going on in if your brain is anything like mine, you know, you've just got the back of your head is always thinking, you know, there's something I'm not talking about here.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's really, really important. And I need to figure out what that is. because that's the sense I'm getting from your new book.
Yeah. So, I mean, so people have asked, why did you write this book? This is very different for you. and the first answer, frankly, is, you know, I've been doing this a long time. I've written 5 books about marketing. Maybe I was a little burned out, you know, in terms of writing about marketing again, or maybe I felt like I had most of what I needed to say about how to do marketing. Right. Now that doesn't mean I won't come back and write another one someday, but there was a sense in me that I personally was exploring maybe and have been exploring for the last 2 decades, you know, why I'm doing this, you know, what value I'm bringing to the world, the impact I want to have. And I've really been a student of, you know, of the self, if you will. I mean, trying to, you know, constantly work on myself, build a better me so I could build a better business. Mm-hmm. And there definitely were things I've noticed, I've witnessed, I've practiced, you know, that I feel like have been as much a part of whatever I would call success, as, you know, any of the book sales that I've had.
Do you feel that the, I mean, as much as you say it was, might be like a self-discovery type of journey, that you are on, cause you're still walking this journey of small business people, right?
You bet.
I mean, you're around a lot of small businesses. You bet. You're consulting for them. You're speaking to the audiences, you know, like I do. And then you're meeting with people who are founders of companies, small businesses. Did you feel like you were seeing something missing?
Well, I've said for a long time that one of the things that drives me is trying to help small business owners figure this marketing thing out, because I think it is what's holding them back a lot. I think one of the greatest things in the world is to be able to own your own business. I think it's the most freeing, happiest, you know, thing that somebody should pursue. Absolutely. But I also see it sucking the life out of people. Well, for a lot of folks, because they can't get this marketing thing right. And so that's really driven me for my whole career, really. It's what's driven me to build certain things, do certain things, put in so much, give away so much, because that's my true mission is to help those folks. I really love small business owners. Yeah. And so this book, in a lot of ways, is not that far off of what I've been doing. You know, marketing, I think in a lot of ways, marketing, I've said for years, marketing is everything in a small business, everything that goes on.
It is everything. It's marketing. It's everything in any business.
Yeah.
But I find it really hard to convince big companies of that, which is why. And so, you know, my heart is in the small to mid-sized businesses,
right.
like I think yours is. And because we're talking to the person who is writing the checks, we're talking to the person who's, it's their money and stuff, which I love talking to that person.
Yep.
I love talking to that person. And almost without question, when I am working with somebody who has had some modicum of success, they have this other side of them, you know, where there's much more to it than just building a widget.
I would agree.
How would you describe, I mean, that must have helped you in not just in your journey, but also helped you in, you know, even deciding to write this.
Yeah.
Because you and I both know, all right, first question, is there a market?
Yeah. I think that there's a tremendous market. So this, maybe we better set this up a little bit. It is a very different, you know, structure of a book. So it's here.
Thank you. I buzzed through a bunch of that, and I'm telling you, I can't wait to get the book.
Well, thank you. So it's a daily book. So every day you get a new reading. So it's not meant to be, oh, I'm going to pick it up and read the thing. Now I'm self-reliant. It is every day you get a new idea, a new inspirational reading from some, what I think is still today, some of the best entrepreneur writing, you know, ever created. Then I kind of contextualize it for today with my experience. And then I leave you every day with a challenge question.
Yeah, so let me back you up just a second on that one now, all right? Is that you went from traditional book writing.
Yes.
To how we basically say, okay, you know, here's why you suck and here's what you need to do to get better at it, right?
Yeah.
You turned it into but you used a format that is much more in the idea of a daily devotional.
It is, yeah.
That's what it is.
Yep.
And I read through a bunch of them, but unlike most devotionals that I have, you know, books that I have seen, this one I had to pay attention And I had to really think about what I was reading.
Yep.
So you chose this format, but then you chose to use 12, and they're not necessarily just all authors, but they are writers in a certain sense. Okay.
That's right.
And you chose people from way back.
Yeah.
As being your examples.
Yes.
And then kind of tagging along with them, like each month you have a different, you know, person, like my birth month was, you know, July. I figure I got to go look at July, you know, is, I think it's Emily Dickinson is mine. I think it was Emily Dickinson. And so I thought, oh, Emily Dickinson, you know, now what the heck does she have to do with entrepreneurs?
Well, so actually the way the book is structured, I did open every month with featuring an author to give you a little bit of a flavor of that person's history. But what I actually chose was a vein of literature, most of which was written in the mid-19th century, from about 1840 to 1880. So if you think about what was going on in that time in the United States, at least, we were on the cusp of the Civil War. We were trying to abolish slavery. We were certainly very culturally, politically divided. Women were marching in the streets to get the right to vote. And so the writing that came out of that period was some of the first really countercultural writing in the United States. I mean, it was a time when people are saying, hey, you don't have to listen to your preacher or your politician or even your parents. You need to start following your own path. And even a lot of the protagonists from some of the fiction work of that time, like The Scarlet Letter and Little Women and Moby Dick, the protagonists in those were all very self-reliant, meaning that they decided to trust their own path and their own journey and their own heart, you know, as to for what they were going to pursue rather than just follow the well-worn path of others that came before them. There was a lot of writing that was very overt. I mean, the essays of Ralph Waldo Emerson and Thoreau, you know, were very much saying, hey, do your own thing. And I just think that as I got deeper into it, and a lot of entrepreneurs, I see Pinterest and Instagram quotes from Emerson and Thoreau. I mean, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs have already kind of embraced some of those thinkers. But as I got deeper into it, I found that that's what was being written about completely in that time frame in America. And I just thought, man, those messages are so spot on for what entrepreneurs need to do.
Well, I don't think necessarily the people today, you know, like you talk about the ones on, you know, where they're using quotes. I think they're looking for quotes.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
You know, I'm a '60s kid, so somebody like Thoreau, you know, was a huge influence back, to me back when I was growing up. And so I thought it was interesting that all of a sudden I'm looking at him again. I'm going, wait, is he back in my life now? You know? like wait a minute. What does this have to, you know, what does this have to do with this? But at the same time, Like you and I had, you know, we also did a, when you interviewed me for my book, Uncopyable, and in my book, Uncopyable, one of the big strategies of being uncopyable is when I say steal genius.
Yeah.
And stealing genius means to leave your comfort zone, leave your world, and go find somebody who's doing something very, very cool, very smart, and take that and bring it back into your world. And so that was one of my first things, reactions when I started to go through this, your new book. I thought he's stealing some really amazing geniuses.
Yeah.
But you know, even I, it didn't occur to me to go look at, you know, somebody like Louisa May Alcott and that, oh, I could take some ideas from her.
Well, and one of the things that I did, once I started getting into research, and I did, I spent about 6 months doing none of my research on this, is that, you know, a lot of particularly female writers at the time, a lot of their work was really buried or not brought to light at all and until later, much later in life, given the times we were in. And so when I got into actually their letters and journals and things that have now been collected and are in archives and things, I mean, you really got into some depth. It wasn't just the, you know, the pithy little quotes that can go on a t-shirt. I mean, you really, there was so much material there. And again, I think these themes of trusting yourself, you know, finding your purpose by, you know, by experiencing life, you know, having
road less traveled, right?
Empathy for everything around you, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's just, the themes are just over and over again. And I think they're so strong for entrepreneurs.
Yeah. What did, so as you were going through this researching journey,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you already kind of had the idea, all right, I'm going to go study these people.
Yep.
You know, a little more than maybe I already have, and I'm going to really see how I can tie them into, you know, my tribe. What did you learn? I mean, what did you feel were the biggest? Did you already just touch on it when you, you know, just now?
I started to touch on it. A couple things I learned. One was how relevant. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I would read a passage and go, "That couldn't have been written 150 years ago."
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're still having that problem, you know. and wait, so that was amazing.
You mean how politicians were back there then too?
Not naming anybody. No, it's amazing though. I mean, I think there are some parallels to where maybe we find ourselves today, and a lot of historians I think would suggest that there is a kind of repeating and cycling of you know, generational kind of happenings. And so I do feel like we may be back in a little bit of that same sort of feeling. And I've always felt that entrepreneurs, quite frankly, I think entrepreneurs are the do-gooders of the world in a lot of cases. I mean, they're the ones out trying to solve wrongs and bring new things to life and employ people. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, I think, you know, I've gone as far as suggesting that you know, a lot more self-reliant entrepreneurs might actually be one of the ways to kind of bring us back to a unified us.
Okay, you guys listening to this? I mean, that's kind of, I can't disagree with that.
Yeah.
I cannot disagree with that. I mean, you know, the entrepreneurs, I think, are the engine of the world.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, and most entrepreneurs that I have gotten to know over my life, these people, they really are, they're trying to change something.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it might not be something, you know, world changing or anything like that, but they do try to change something. And that, to me, is a very noble right purpose in life, is to, you know, if you're able, you know what, I think one of the most noble things you can do in the world is employ people.
You know,
is have employees who you are paying and they are able to take care of their lives, things like that, which to me, entrepreneurs are the best at doing that. But you've got these, you know, like I'm looking at the list of, the list of your authors.
Yeah.
Okay. And I already mentioned Louise May Alcott and Emily Dickinson. I recognize, you know, I knew all but two.
Which
I was surprised that you threw a couple of wild cards in there at us. And as much as I wanted to be surprised at Frederick Douglass, I guess I wasn't surprised at Frederick Douglass. But Margaret Fuller.
Yeah.
I didn't know who she was. I mean, Margaret Fuller and Willa Cather.
Cather.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
don't have my readers on. Sorry. Margaret Cather. Can you just tell us real quickly who they
are? Yes. So Margaret Fuller is really an amazing story. I mean, anyone who's studied, you know, feminist literature particularly, I mean, they know who Margaret Fuller is. I mean, she was kind of the first American woman to write about women's rights and was really the leader of the suffrage movement. And the reason you don't know more about her, she died in her 20s.
She did. I didn't catch that. I saw that she was the first woman in Harvard Library.
First woman allowed in the Harvard Library.
I've never been allowed in Harvard Library, so I think that's pretty damn good.
She was actually the first woman publisher of a, you know, major daily paper. It was in the UK, not in the US, but I mean, and in her 20s, I mean, she was amazingly accomplished. But again, died very young. But actually, you know, left quite a body of work. But again, given our history, given our time, you know, the era, a lot of that work didn't really come to life until, in some cases, the last couple decades.
Wow.
The Willa Cather is one that you probably, when I say some titles, you might know her because some of her books have actually been turned into movies. So she wrote O Pioneer and My Antonia and I can't remember now, the Song of the Lark was the third in a trilogy that, you know, are very, really almost kind of created that plains, you know, literature, because all of it was about kind of the pioneers stretching out to the West. And so she actually falls a little outside of the time frame, but she was very influenced by the writers but I'm just a big fan of hers. I love Willa Cather.
Well, I mean, just, you know, in the brief time that I was able to kind of go through the book, you know, like I thought it was fascinating that Herman Melville dedicated Moby Dick to Nathaniel Hawthorne. I did not know that.
Well, so one of the things I learned, and it really doesn't surprise me. It did at the time, but then I got thinking, well, I've had lots of authors that are friends, you know, especially business book authors and things.
Good point.
And they
that
were,
did not occur to me.
They were all really good friends. I mean, they hung out the same places. They went to the same social media conferences, well, or something like that.
Yeah.
They actually, they were quite good friends, and there was, you know, there were a lot of letters back and forth to each other. Thoreau wrote lots of letters to Hawthorne and to Emerson, and their letters are where I found, I thought, some of the best stuff, you know, frankly, because mm-hmm. they were, in some ways, they weren't trying to write about, you know, something. They were actually, in some cases, explaining an issue they were having to a friend, and I thought it was really beautifully written. Of course, they also didn't use any emojis, so it was a lot better writing.
So, was it harder to read?
There were some cases that the language was much more flowery than we use today. Yeah. No question. There's some terms that are maybe a little antiquated. I did actually make a little effort to modernize pronouns in a lot of the writing, just because, you know, it was
just
always
make it easier. This question just popped into my head of the list. Who was the number one person that you picked because you just said, I got to have this person?
Well, I started the book without question knowing that, I mean, the title is a nod to an essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson called Self-Reliance. So I started knowing I was going to quote a lot of Ralph Waldo Emerson. I also knew I was going to quote a lot of Henry David Thoreau. And I would say that I need to go through and count someday. maybe I'll do that some winter day. But I suspect those two get name checked more than anybody in the book.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you know, Mark Twain, mm-hmm. Huge favorite of mine. I mean, for a lot of reasons, just because.
Yeah. Well, and have you ever read a book? Maybe it was about a totally unrelated topic, but you went into it thinking about, I'm going to read this book looking for ideas about, you know, X. So I've done that, like with architecture books and things, you know, because they talk beautifully about patterns and about communities and things. So if you pick up The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and read it thinking of looking for entrepreneurial themes, I mean, they abound.
Okay. You know,
Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer were so self-reliant.
Yeah, they were. That's right.
And he really, Twain really made them, you know, the storyline in a lot of books like that in that era was, you know, do good and God will provide for you, you know,
Do good, work hard.
And in these books, you know, it was a lot more about, you know, follow your truth, and sometimes you're going to get in trouble, and sometimes you're going to have to figure your way out, you know, but it's if you read it with that sort of context, it's amazing.
Do you think the idea of self-reliance was kind of on their minds completely? I shouldn't say completely, but I mean,
you know,
do you feel like that was something that they felt? Because, you know, we're talking about entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And the lesson that I think when you say self-reliance to entrepreneurs today, I think they can take it one of two ways.
There's no question. I mean, if you Google self-reliance, you're going to find sites that teach you how to like live off the land and do your own thing and not depend on anybody.
Right.
That's not certainly what I meant. What I meant was that, you know, that it's, I mean, you could substitute the word for self-trust. I mean, you have to trust yourself enough to know that, you know, you shouldn't be controlled by what others think you should do or say you should do or, you know, what others are doing, on one hand. And you also have to trust yourself enough to let go of the things that you can't control, mm-hmm. which are most things. I mean, the only thing we really can control is how we show up and how we respond to what happens to us. That's it.
Right. Well, and that there are a lot of things, especially when we are the boss.
Yeah.
Okay. It's up to us to find the answer.
That's right. That's right.
It's up to us to come up with the solution that's going to work. So we have to be self-reliant.
Yeah. But there's also what's interesting and ironic a bit is there's a lot in the literature, and I write about this, also suggests that part of our job is to prove ourselves wrong. That if we have all the answers and we aren't willing to change our mind and we aren't empathetic, you know, to other people's situations, then we're not going to grow. We're not going to evolve. I mean, if we think we have to have all the answers or that we do have all the answers, we're not going to grow. And so a lot of the writing, or there are certainly entries that encourage you to find a better way and, you know, follow that path if it makes sense. And certainly one of the ways you do that is you go out and you listen to other people and you experience other things, and that's how you're actually going to learn what's, you know, your true path. But you don't have to hold on to your, you know, your past beliefs. If something else rings truer, then you should follow that.
I don't think you're right about that. No, of course I think you're right about that. It's in my book. You know, you got to expose yourself to new things.
That's
you know,
right.
And you know, because you can't, you know, I think the idea of saying that you believe you're right. Well, you might believe you're right, but it's within this context, right? You know, and if you don't go out and spread your experience and your perspective to where you do see things through different eyes, then, you know, you're very narrow. You have a very narrow viewpoint.
Well, and a lot of times I think entrepreneurs run the trap. People run the trap of feeling like, look, this is what people believe I am, or who they believe I am, and I don't want to let them down. And sometimes that what they believe I am is really not, you know, fully realized me.
How many of us? And I say us because you know, I've had that situation, you know, where I kind of think, well, I sure hope they don't figure out. Right. Figure it out that I don't know all the answers, right? Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm just, you know, or those of us that, you know, fake it till we make it, you know,
An example I use all the time that a lot of people can relate to, as silly as it is, you know, how many really accomplished go-getter people out there that are changing the world, you know, are out there with one face on, and then they go like to their family or their high school friends or something, and all of a sudden they revert back to this smallish person that they believe that's who that person is. And, you know, I think a lot of people are guilty of that.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, very quickly, I'm going to relate an incident that happened to me 3 weeks ago at my 50th high school class reunion, which was filled with nothing but old people. But I was, you know, I was having dinner with a bunch of people, and there were some of the old popular cheerleaders and stuff like that sitting there. And we were going around the table with this kind of fun thing where we were saying, was there anybody that we had a crush on in high school that we never told them, right? And, you know, because, you know, that's, you're living that moment, right, of back when you're the kid in high school, right?
Yeah,
we're sitting there and you know, they're looking at me, you know, I'm known as the guy who, you know, I'm the author, I'm the speaker, I'm this type of stuff. So I'm sitting here and then I go, yeah, I had a massive crush on you. Right? I point to one of the women sitting there at the table and I said, you know, I had a crush on you. And she looked at me and she said, I don't even remember you.
Right.
You know, and I thought, wow, I'm back in high school again.
Exactly.
So yeah, those different roles that we play, you know, and you're exactly right. So, you know, I this is really fun.
Can I suggest something, Steve?
I'm going to say, what are we not talking about?
Yeah. All right. So one of the things that I have done that might be interesting in other shows that I've been on is because this is, you know, a page is 2 minutes. We've been talking about what's on the page. So why don't we read a page? It'll take 2 minutes and people will get it. It's, you know, us marketers, it's a free sample that they get.
That's a good idea.
But I think it'll also give people, I mean, they'll definitely know what we're talking about now.
All right. Which one do you pick?
I just, you know, I pulled one up here that was sitting on my desk and, so I'm going to read it. It actually is from the Scarlet Letter is where the quote's from. So the way it's structured is I give every day a title. Then you've got the quote. Then you've got, me reading the, my riff on it and then the challenge question.
Cool.
All right. So here we go. Congruence. No person for any considerable period can wear one face to himself and another to the multitude without finally getting bewildered as to which may be the true. Nathaniel Hawthorne, The Scarlet Letter, 1850. Quite often, the very thing that leads many to strike out on their own is an attempt to bring their business and personal lives in alignment. The corporate culture they'd entered and adopted no longer feels congruent with their personal goals. Congruence, by definition, implies sameness, agreement, harmony, or compatibility, all concepts made wholly real by following an entrepreneurial vision. So it's terribly ironic, then, that when the amazing fresh opportunity afforded the entrepreneur is coupled with the day-to-day pressure to build a business, people are easily pushed further and faster out of congruence than when they started. Remember playing crack the whip at the ice skating rink as a kid? It kind of feels like that. This looks like working more hours than is healthy or necessary, promoting products and services you don't use or believe in, asking others to do things you are unwilling to do, or worse, wearing one face to yourself and another to your team, your employees, and your loved ones. In geometry, when stating that two triangles are congruent, you might use a complicated congruence statement. In your entrepreneurial quest, it's even more complex. So your challenge question for today, how is your life a reflection of the gift you need to bring to others, and how is it not?
Say the question again.
How is your life a reflection of the gift you need to bring to others, and how is it not?
Yeah, I see. That's a great question for entrepreneurs. And I'm glad you thought of this to do that, because I thought how can we kind of show them how this format is set up, and just, you know, that's one day.
A chunk to think of for that one day.
It is a chunk to think of. You know, when I was going through, you know, I was reflecting on some of the challenge questions. And do you have a favorite challenge question that's in the book?
It's funny. People have started asking me, "What's your favorite reading? And who's your favorite author?" And
I thought that was a great.
I love that one. And the idea behind this book is that you're not going to pick this up and read it and go, "Oh, I got this self-reliance thing figured out." I actually refer to this as a practice. Mm-hmm. This is something that, so let's say you read that one for the day, and now you go out into the day, and hopefully somewhere planted in your mind is this thing of like, are my actions and words, you know, aligned? Am I, you know, are there cases where I'm doing, you know, so it's not that you're going to make some big change. I think the first step is to start actually reflecting on and witnessing when it's occurring, because mm-hmm. you can't make a change until you do that, you know, that first step.
Mm-hmm. Well, I gotta believe that this kind of, what's the word? Scrambled your brain a little bit when you were putting this together?
First off, a couple of things for people who have written books. It's much harder to write short entries than it is to go on for 10,000 words.
We both know that. But, that's the old speech.
Yes.
You know, it's the old Winston Churchill. You know, somebody asked him how long does, you know, could he give a speech? And he said, "How long do you want?" And they said, "Well, why do you, you know, how much?" And he says, "Well, you know, if you want 20 minutes, it's going to take me a week to put that together. If you wanted 4 hours, I could start right now."
That's right. Or there's a quote attributed to Mark Twain. I would have written a much shorter letter had I had more time. So that scrambles your brain. But also, you know, you want to think deeply about this yourself and reflect on it. And in the course of writing this, I have a day job, as well. And so, you know, I did a lot of writing on weekends, and, it was tough to write. I think my record may have been 10 entries in a day, in
that's
one day.
Yeah. That's a lot.
But I did that only a couple of times.
Yeah. That's a lot. I can appreciate how hard that is to do that. So, John Jantz, author of great books, The Duct Tape Marketing, Referral Engine, Duct Tape Selling, you know, books I talked about, has a new one that is called The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur. And is it ready now? Is
it coming? Depending upon when people are listening to this, October 22nd, 2019. And you can find all about it at selfreliantentrepreneur.com. And you may have to Google those words, because nobody can spell self-reliant entrepreneur. But you'll get close.
I'll put it in the notes and put it online so they can they can click and go and go there and pre-order the book. I already pre-ordered it, even though I do have the copy that you sent me. But I'm anxious to stick it by my bed, or actually, I think I'm going to have it here in my office, and it's just going to be something part of my beginning of my day with, you know, when I come in here. So
that's actually my hope for a lot of people, because it can fit in, and every page has a couple lines at the end, so you can even jot some notes, you know, after you read the question.
Ooh,
if you
I
want
can wreck
to that
the book. I love
you can
wreck
the book. And this was, I put my foot down to the publisher. I had him put a ribbon in it so that, you know, you can keep your place.
There's a ribbon.
There's a ribbon in it. Yeah.
I wish I had a ribbon in my book.
To tell you the truth, where the inspiration is, funny you mentioned Peter Drucker, but a couple decades ago, I picked up the Daily Drucker, and it was a similar format to this. Somebody had curated many of his works and put them into kind of this daily format with an action step.
Got it on my shelf right back there.
And it has a ribbon in it. And ever since then, I wanted to have a book that had a ribbon in it. So you can have a nice blue ribbon in your book.
That's a good aspiration, I think. I think so, for my next one. So, okay. Hey, John, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me today. Great talking to you. I hope we talk again in the future and share some more crazy ideas. Good luck with your book.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Knock it out of the park. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Steve.
So there goes my interview with John Jantz, author of Duct Tape Marketing, the referral engine, and now his new book, The Self-Reliant Entrepreneur, that just came out this morning. This morning, and like I say, when I last looked, it was already number one on the new releases. So I'm sure it's climbing fast on the rest of it too. So other than that, you know, that's it. I mean, if you have some questions, I'm not sure I can answer them for you, because obviously it was, you know, you'd probably be wanting to ask the questions of John. This is always, we always record these, so the archive will be up in the next probably 24 hours at most. You can always reach out to me for any questions that you might have. And other than that, you know, this is Steve Miller, better known as Kelly's dad and marketing gunslinger. Thanks again for joining us this month on our monthly IMTS webinars. And we'll be back again next month. And in the meantime, always remember, be uncopyable. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next time.